Aspire. Build your power skills and increase your employability. Brought to you by Amdocs.
Welcome to part two. Thank you for joining us. Let's continue our conversation with Austin Kleon. So Austin, how can we fuel creativity? Are there any ways that you can suggest to optimize our creative process?
Yeah, I think that there are kind of three steps. Well, let's think of it this way. First, there's the inspiration stage. So I think the best way to be inspired creatively is to watch other people working or to see the results of someone's process. I'm thinking of a great story. Mr. Rogers, who had a children's television program in America, he used to bring in sculptors and musicians and all sorts of creative people to do what they do in front of the kids on his program. And a lot of the people were very, they were kind of like nervous about coming on the show. And like, I'm not used to being around kids or talking to kids or whatever. And Mr. Rogers said, don't worry about that. I just want you to do what you do in front of the children. Because if they see you doing something, that will make them think, well, maybe I would like to try that, right? So there's something about getting in front of creative work, first of all, that fires our imagination. So first, there's a kind of like being exposed to creative work in all different kinds of ways. So that's the first step. The second step is attempting some yourself. And I think this can be very simple. It can be something as simple as keeping a journal every day, I think is a great way to do that. If you want to attempt some basic drawing exercises, I think a notebook is the easiest way to start being creative, because if you carry a notebook around and you just set aside 15 minutes a day to fill a page with whatever's rattling around in your head, that in itself becomes a creative act, because what happens is you start putting your ideas down on these pages. And if you do that every day for a week or two, you start realizing patterns. And you start noticing, wait a minute, I'm having the same idea over and over. What does this mean? You know, so like a notebook's a really good way to, just like a real base level, you know, way to be creative. Other ways you can do it, you know, you could take up a hobby like sewing or cooking or woodworking, or you know, anything where you're taking materials and putting them together and making a third thing. And then, so that's the second. That's the process of daily practice, is what I call that. It's, you have to have like a daily practice where you kind of do some little creative thing every day. It doesn't take a lot of time. It could be 10, 15 minutes a day, but you let those days kind of stack up, and it brings you somewhere. So. Okay, so we talked about inspiration, then a daily creative practice. And then at the end of that, the third step, I think, is sharing your creative work with, it doesn't have to be the world. It could be with a couple of different people. So, for example, if you write poetry or something for fun, meeting up with a couple of other poets and reading your work, sharing your work together. It could be having a blog. It could be having an internal blog or an internal meeting at your company or something like that. But when you present your creative work to other people, then you get their reactions to it. And then that becomes part of the process. You go back to that first step of inspiration. When you hear what other people have to say about your creative work, that sparks new ideas. And so that's kind of the cycle to me. Is that inspiration, daily practice, and sharing. And that kind of is how my whole world operates. When I make things and put them out into the world, there's always the that's not the end of the process. That's actually the beginning of a new process.
Yeah, so that's the three steps: the inspiration, the daily practice, and the third is sharing. Talk about the sharing. I mean, you know, sharing process actually builds an innovative work culture. But what should we share? You know, how can we become better at it? You know, this is one of the questions always comes to mind because sharing is not that easy at times, you know. So can you help us with some simple steps, you know, what to share and how to become better at it?
So why sharing is so hard is that it requires people to completely rethink what work is. When you expose your work to the world, you hear from people and they kind of give you new ideas that you can either use in the work or discard, but it is an education. The second thing that happens is that a lot of the work that we do is hidden in the sense that people don't necessarily value what it is that we do because they don't understand it. So a lot of people, they find themselves in workplaces where nobody knows what they actually do. So they don't value it as much. So if there's a way to share with people what it is that your work entails, you not only educate them about, you know, your own work, and they might find something valuable in your own process that they can use in their own work, but you're building value for yourself because you're saying, this is what my work is about, you know, and this is the effort that goes into it. So I think that there's this really, you know, interesting, unique value in sharing your process. And why sharing this way is so hard is that it requires people to completely rethink what work is. You know, that work, if you think about work as the main purpose is to get a product, is to get to the end, you know, to get to this finished thing. If you think about it in that way, it's very hard to operate this way. But if you think about work as a continuous flow, as a continuous process of, then it becomes much more easy to operate in this way. But again, this is a hard sell for people. You know, it's a hard sell to get people to open up. But I think the other thing that can happen on an individual level is if you share what you're working on in the right way, that becomes your resume in a sense. That you don't necessarily need a resume as much if you have some sort of, you know, way to share your work on a day-to-day basis. If people can see that you do this kind of work, you know, that actually kind of becomes your resume in a sense, or your promotional device, you know. So, I think but it really requires stepping back and thinking about what work actually is and what life is. If you could think about it as a long, continuous process versus these little chunked up, you know, product things, I think it really frees you up. When we think about creative work, Mozart or Picasso or Beethoven, these individuals, right? These great geniuses that come down to earth and they have superhuman talents, and you know, these are the superstars of the workplace, you know, the great individuals, right? And that's one way to think about creative work, that it's done by like individual genius brains that have special things that the rest of us don't have. I think there's a more accurate picture of how creative work happens, and that comes to us from the musician Brian Eno, and he says that it's about genius. What genius is rethinking a lot of these processes as happening in a network of people thinking together. So let's take Beethoven. It's like, yes, Beethoven was probably the closest thing to a genius we've had in music, but he is situated in a very rich network and context of people that allow him and help him develop his work. So there's musicians that can play the work. There are patrons that can pay for the work. And most importantly, there's an audience that's ready to receive the work. And so, you know, you have to rethink creative work as happening in a network rather than happening for an individual. And if you take that perspective, in the workplace, doing great work isn't just about yourself and doing, you know, and achieving and going beyond your coworkers and standing out. It's about building teams and getting yourself around the smartest, most interesting people, and the people who are unlike you, you know, the people who have skills that you don't have or ways of thinking that aren't like yours, and building a kind of, you know, a superhero team in a sense, you know, having people that complement you. And so when it comes to sharing in the workplace, one of the things that is most important, I think, is to discover people in your culture, in your work culture, that you know, that you kind of vibe with and you're kind of wanting to go in the same direction, and to kind of informally have those relationships. Hey, can I show you something? Can I get your feedback on this? You know, all great writers have this, for example. Like, you don't write a manuscript and immediately send it to your editor, you know, or a publisher or something like that. You have a trusted little group. Sometimes it's one person, sometimes it's two or three people. You have a trusted group of people that you could put your work in front of when it's not ready to be exposed to the whole world, you know? Just when you need a little bit, you need someone to, you know, like for me, it's my wife. My wife is my first editor for all of my work, and she edits all my writing. There's something that happens if I just watch my wife read a piece of my writing. Simply by watching her read it, like over her shoulder, I know what's wrong with it immediately. Because there's something about watching her read my work that I understand what the work really is. It's this weird mental trick. The filmmaker, Quentin Tarantino, he'll have his friends over and he'll read scripts aloud, stuff that he's written. But he doesn't ask the people to give him any feedback. He actually just wants to read it aloud to them, because there's something about having to present your work in front of people is you understand what's wrong with it immediately. I know it sounds really weird, but there's something about that interaction, just having other human eyeballs on your work, that immediately changes the way you think about it. And so it's like this really, really powerful thing. But to have trusted people in your life, that in your work, that you can put things in front of and kind of bounce ideas off of, that's really, really important. And I think in some ways, again, this is stuff that workers have to do on their own, but it's also things that can be facilitated from the top down. Right. You know, if you give people enough time or the resources to really talk to each other freely, you can kind of develop this kind of culture. It has to happen from the bottom up between people, those kinds of interactions, but it can be helped along from the top down, I think.
I think the one which you just mentioned about taking the feedbacks, and I completely resonate this with the innovators, because when I see this, all the new people coming out with the ideas, right? It's the first time someone doing or, you know, really creating an idea or building a solution, a web app or anything, right? So for him or her, it's the first time experience. And before they actually come down to pitch to the panelists, they have their own circle where they validate it. They test it out. They take the feedbacks and then go back to the drawing board, make changes, and then finally they go ahead and pitch it. And I think the analogy what you gave is very right. Thank you so much on that. So, Austin, do you see the benefits from the fact that we are working in a large organization? You know, how do you really see this creative work being, you know, benefited to everyone in this organization?
Well, I think one thing that is helpful is to look at the kind of, you know, the dream of a creative person is to not have a day job, so to speak, is to just be able to, like, stay home and make their art and be creative or whatever. But, you know, there's a long list of artists and poets and all sorts of creative people, musicians, that have chosen to stay, to have a job, to have a connection to a workplace or be part of an organization. And I think there are many benefits to it. For one thing, it's a lonely life in a sense, being an individual creator. Being part of a workplace or an organization, for one thing, it gives you access to very bright, interesting people all the time. And you're exposed to their ideas and things that are constantly going on in the organization. The other thing that happens is you have to be accountable. There's a kind of accountability that happens when you're part of an organization. You have to actually deliver things. And I think that when you have to be accountable for your work, it causes you to rise to the challenge, you know. But mostly I think what being part of an organization does is it's about that connection. I think it's also support. I mean, I think that there is something about being part of a greater structure that relieves a little bit of the pressure of being creative. You know, like for me, I have my little small team of, you know, I have my wife helps me a lot, and I have an agent, and, you know, I have my readers. But on the whole, whether, you know, my ideas work or not is really on my shoulders. And if I was part of a bigger team or part of an organization, some of that pressure would be relieved, you know, and particularly in terms of a living. You know, there's a lot to be said for not having to worry about how you're going to eat that frees you up to take some of those, you know, some of those risks that are required for good creative work. So, but I think more than anything, being part of an organization gives you a real connection to the world and how the world is actually working and what, you know, and the people in it. And so I think that it's it could be a nice ballast, so to speak, a kind of anchor for people to be part of an organization. So I think the benefits are great. And I think that they can be navigated in a way that makes them even more beneficial to the individual.
Yeah, I think it's basically the network which is going to be really helpful. And that's the biggest benefit what I can see in the large organization. And when you talk to people, you know, get inspired, and together when they can work as a team, the, you know, the creative work is going to be multiplied. It's not just going to be, you know, at a very low level. It's just going to be doubled up, and you can really see amazing wonders happening. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, humans are social animals. And so two brains are always better than one. I don't think that there's one solution or one best way, but I do tend to feel that the power of the network is in general greater than any, you know, any downsides.
All right. So one of the main things, and I want your suggestions here, what would be that one message to all our audience members, you know, to keep up their creativity high everywhere? What is that one message?
I think it's to recognize yourself as a creative being. The major thing I hear from most people is, well, I'm just not creative. I'm not an artist. I can't draw. I can't write. I can't this and that. One of the things I would say is that remember yourself as a child. What did you love to do when you were a kid? Because I just haven't met a kid that wasn't super creative. And I think a lot of the creative spirit is about getting in touch with that childlike part of yourself. I think this can also be helped along by spending some time with actual children. And I do not recommend having children necessarily, but I do think it's helpful to be, if you're an aunt or an uncle, or you just have friends who have young children, there's something about hanging out with a four-year-old that will really give you a real sense of the kind of open possibilities and the kind of imagination and creative spirit that we all have access to. And so my first piece of advice to most people is to understand that you have these things. They are available to you. What it is that you just haven't been in touch with them for a while. And so you just have to get in touch with them. And the way that you do that is you spend time you know, spend 15 minutes a week listening to music, or spend 15 minutes a week reading poetry, or, you know, going to the museum and looking at a painting. Bring creative work into your life, expose yourself to it, and then find a way to make your own practice. And I think that's how we begin.
Very well said, very well said. I completely resonate and agree. You know, spending time, and first is about recognizing yourself, and do not listen to people's opinion. It's about you recognizing first that you are creative, you have the ability, all the skills, and you can just take out time for yourself, have that inner child in you, be curious, and try to practice. So this brings us to the end of our dialogue, and we have some great takeaways from this discussion. First is taking inspiration, which is learning how to steal like an artist and make your own versions to create new wonders. The second is practicing creativity and making it as an everyday habit at work and beyond. And the third is importance of sharing your work and knowing how to do it, you know, really, really trying to, you know, showcase your work genuinely and knowing how to do it. So thank you, Austin, for sharing your valuable perspectives and insights. I really enjoyed this discussion, and I'm sure our audience will love it. And here's the shout out to everyone who is listening to our podcast. Thank you so much for joining in. You can visit Austin's website, www.austincleon.com, to check out his amazing stuff and get inspired to practice creativity in your everyday life. Stay tuned for our next podcast by Aspire Team. Thank you, Austin.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. This was fun.